Hei og hjertelig velkommen til Namaste. Dette Vibeke som i studio, og i dag har jeg med meg en veldig spesiell gjest, i hvert fall en spesiell person for meg. Og det en person som jeg kan rett og slett si forandret livet mitt, og jeg tuller ikke. Hun kom inn i livet mitt da jeg gikk gjennom det jeg må si helt frem til i dag, var kanskje den tøffeste tida i livet. Men den historien skal jeg komme tilbake til. Men i dag så er intervjuet på engelsk, for min gjest er nemlig fra India. And it's such an honor to have you here, Taran.
Thank you.
You are an Ashtanga teacher.
Yes.
And at the moment, you're here in Norway for a month as a guest teacher at Puro Yoga in Oslo.
Yes, I am.
It's 15 years since you came the first time, and this is your sixth time in Oslo?
Sixth or more. Yes. I stopped counting after some time.
But why do you keep coming back?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I really don't know the answer to that. I love to be home and I like my routine. I like stability and grounding. But and I do like a daily program, like being in one place. But I have to say there's something about Norway, the people, the yoga, and which just keeps bringing me back, and I think it's just a connection. It's a connection. Maybe I'm convinced in my past life I was here, living here or born here. Something I have with this place. So definitely, Norway is the only country where I always make an exception. Only for Norway. Mm. I leave my kids behind, my family, my duties, my responsibilities, and here I am.
And I remember when you arrived, I said, you're coming in one of the worst months for us, you know, it's dark, it's cold, and you were like so excited. It's like you just love it.
Well, that, because our realities are so different. India is such a contrast from Norway in every way. And I think it is the... It's the contrast. It's the extremity of whether it's the weather or the darkness. These things don't matter because, you know, it's the irony of all of this is you can go to the coldest, darkest countries in the world and find the warmest people. How does that happen? I fail to understand.
Well, I'm so happy you say that about us Norwegians because... Yeah. Some people say that we are kind of cold and introvert and like...
No, y'all are like coconuts, hard from the outside and soft from the inside. You just have to crack you open and then that's it, you're in.
And we're very sweet.
Yes.
On the inside.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So, to somebody who doesn't know, because you're an Ashtanga teacher, how would you describe Ashtanga yoga?
Okay, so, I mean, this question is, we can go deep into the philosophy, but I'm not going to do that because we have a lot of Ashtanga or yoga books and Google and everything to look into that. But I think... what Ashtanga yoga, you know, there's so many different styles of yoga. I can't even count anymore. I don't even know. Every day there's a new style of yoga. I think what sets Ashtanga yoga apart from pretty much every style is If there are some key words that I would characterize Ashtanga yoga, it would be, number one is a lineage. It comes from a lineage. It's like a direct descendant from an ancestry. So this is something, this practice is passed on. Like, you know, from if there's the person, then it's passed on to the son, the daughter, then to the grandkids, then the great grandkids. So it's very rooted in the lineage, and it's the most, if not one of the most traditional practices in the universe that stands today. And tradition is something which India is, you know, we are so rooted in our traditions and our values. So this is something, it's so special. And, you know, it's really strange in a way, because whenever you tell someone, I practice Ashtanga yoga, they are like, as if they've seen a ghost, you know, they're so scared. I see so much resistance and fear of the unknown. Because usually we have a reputation of Ashtanga yoga being characterized as the most difficult practice. But if you take the word difficult out and just make it disciplined, the most disciplined practice, I can understand that. Yes, it is. You require a lot of discipline for this practice. And as I would say, yoga is for everybody, young, old, sad, happy, doesn't matter where, which walk of life you come from, yoga is for everyone. Ashtanga yoga, definitely I've seen over the last 20 years of me practicing it, everybody will try it, but it does require a particular mindset. I don't know, it's a few characteristics of a person that draw you to this practice, definitely. And it's like, yeah, but it's a beautiful practice. I mean, you can go into the details of the philosophy of it, eight limbs, which is basically characterized by yoga in general. You know, you have yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana, samadhi. You know, it's in every book. So, yeah, but what distinguishes this practice from others is, I think, vinyasa. If we have to pick up one element, one aspect of Ashtanga yoga, it would be vinyasa.
Yeah. In what way?
So vinyasa, in a simple way to define it, would be a series of asanas which connects one asana to the other. It's like a dance. It's like a flow of a dance where you're, it's movement. When you synchronize your breath and your movement, that is vinyasa.
And you have different series.
Yes.
In the Ashtanga method.
Levels, series, yes. Yeah.
Can you say something about them?
Level one or series one would be primary series, which is mainly, I remember Guruji used to always say that primary series is designed basically for everybody, for any human being. And it yet till date remains to be the most powerful and the most healing sequence. It is purely working on removing all your toxins from your body. And it's the most powerful sequence. And then you go to level two, which is working more on the nervous system, Nadi Shirodha, which is purely nerves. And it's yes, it is, the level is quite high. So you have to be practicing the level one primary series for a good 7-8 years of your life. Then you progress to the second level and then the third level. And then you're just flying.
Yeah. And, you know, already in second series, intermediate series, it's like, it's very advanced, as you say. And I sometimes joke that when you're like in the second or third series, you could be working in a Cirque du Soleil.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's very acrobatic and very like physical on the level that not most people
definitely
can do.
I agree 100%. And that's why I say that in this life, whatever, how much ever time I have in this life, I think if I can just finish the third level, I'll be happy, because this is something which we continue. We are taking, we are bringing it from our past life and we are going to take it to our next life. So maybe in my next life, I will finish fourth, fifth and sixth level, but definitely not in this life.
No,
I have no intention.
It's the same with me. You know, it's working on intermediates. It's more than enough for me.
Yes.
And if I ever complete that one, I would be happy.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter because, you know.
You know, the body's changing every decade. Mm. You become a mother, even if you're a man. We have our cycles, you know. Women especially, we go through pregnancies, post-pregnancies. Men have their own biorhythmic cycles. So it's the body's changing a lot. And the sooner you accept it, I think the better for you. Yeah, definitely.
No, it's just it when you kind of talk about this series, it's you know, when you say you're in series number two, it sounds like, what? But you've been doing yoga for 20 years and you're still on only the second one, you know, because people don't really know what requires to move on to the different series, you know. But then when they start practicing, you know, primary series, I mean, a lot of people do that their whole life.
Yeah.
And they're totally happy with it.
Yes.
You know, it's so many things you can work on.
Yes.
And go deeper. And so it's not like, and it's not like a competition
it's
either.
It's not a competition.
No.
It's not a race. You have to remember one thing. Nobody is giving you a medal. You're not getting a gold medal, silver medal. Mm. So why bother? Just remember, every human being is different. All our bodies are different. And you have to listen to your body. I think this is one thing I have always been. I think it's part of who you are. That's one thing I hold. I mean, I don't want to say it, knock on wood, three times. Mm. But, you know, I have been practicing 20 years, every day, 6 days a week, pretty much never missed. And I have never been injured till date. Mm. Like not even a muscle pull or a sprain or nothing. I think the only way for me to understand why haven't I gotten injuries or is because I'm cautious. I approach this practice like I'm very cautious. That also is, I'm not in any competition. I have nothing to prove to anyone. Now it's just about just doing your practice, because see, this is a practice I want to do for the rest of my life. Mm. I don't ever want to stop. So if you, I think it also has to do a lot with your character as a person. We all have certain traits. So I'm a very cautious person by nature. I apply caution in my daily life and I apply it in my practice, which allows me to not reach a point of injury. Mm. So it's a tricky thing. It can, in not only this yoga, in any yoga, whether you're a sports person, you are, you know, in the anything, you have to be cautious.
Yeah. And also learning to step back a little, hold back.
Step back. Not listen to your body. Mm. It's always talking to you.
Mm.
You have to follow the signs in life, in your practice, in yoga. Do not fight it. Mm. If you fight it, you are going to get in trouble big time.
So what you mean by saying that it's the most disciplined form of yoga, can you say a little bit more about that? What does it require to do Ashtanga yoga?
It's challenging.
Yeah.
It's challenging. So when I say challenging practice, I mean discipline, challenge, kind of go hand in hand. See, life is difficult enough. It's challenging enough. We have so many challenges every day. Challenges create stress. I mean, from the minute we wake up, life every day is a struggle and a challenge. Get up, work, kids, lunchbox, breakfast, meals. I mean, and then we have a practice, which is so challenging. So, but it's interesting that this also brings out this is exactly what we require to get past the day and get past our challenges. I don't know. It's really, I'm yet to understand why we push ourselves when we are already being pushed in our daily lives. But it gives us something back. That's why we all are still there every day on the mat. We get back.
So what do you think is the reward? I mean, why? Because for me, sometimes the hardest part is actually to get on the mat. Mm-hmm. It's not the physical practice. It's to make space for it, to make time for it, you know, prioritize it. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the reward.
The reward is how you feel when you finish your practice. Mm. Aren't you always so happy? You're like, thank God. Like that is the saving grace, you know. It is very hard. It is a challenge getting on the mat. Every day we find many reasons not to. There are so many reasons not to get on the mat and do your practice. But once you finish, you feel so good. It's whatever good is.
The yoga bliss,
Yoga bliss, the calm. I don't know how long that lasts.
At least a few minutes, no.
And yeah.
But it does make you want to come back the next day.
It's beautiful, absolutely.
So how did you start with yoga?
Okay, so yoga for me happened purely by chance. It was not planned. I mean, I was really young, so my mom has a background of yoga for 35 years plus. She has been practicing yoga, Reiki, healing. I mean, everything, dabbed into everything. So I've always been seeing her very disciplined, even at home, even in her practice, even outdoors, everything. But yoga was always a part of her life. And I remember when I was studying in high school, or like 11th, 12th grade, you call it. And it's a very important time in a part of your life where your exams really matter and your marks, your results. And my mom told me that, why don't you come with me for a yoga class? Maybe it will help you concentrate a little more for your examinations. Because I was not really fond of studying. Let's just put it that way. I was more of a physical sports, like I excelled in sports thoroughly. Since I've been 4 years old, I've been in like gymnastics, basketball, hockey, captain, all through my life. So she obviously saw that I have a lot of energy and I need to channelize this energy and apply it in my studies. I mean, I wasn't a bad student. I did fairly well. I got a 70 plus, but it wasn't enough. So she said that, you know, you need to start practicing some yoga and it will help you concentrate and focus. I said, okay. And I went for the class. And after the first class, I just looked at her and I said, after my examinations, I don't want to study anymore. I don't want to do college. I just want to practice and learn yoga. So I don't know now if I look back, was that a way for me to not go to college? But something in me spoke that, you know, I was really young. I was, 17 years old. And she's maybe because of her background with yoga, she understood that one of her children, and she always told me this, I know it's you. Out of all three of my children, you are the one that's going to follow this path. So she was very okay with it. I said, you know, after my studies, my exams, I want to take 1 year off, travel all over India to the main yoga institutes and just kind of find my groove. I want to see what practice sticks with me. So she's like, even I'll join you. Even I'll come. Let's go make this a mother-daughter trip and all. So I remember first I went to Pune. That time BKS Iyengar was alive. I went to the Hatha Yoga. In Pune is the hub. It's of Hatha Yoga. And BKS Iyengar was a legend. And I practiced with one of his very senior instructors. And towards the end, he looked at me. And he told me that you should come back in a few years. I'll never forget what he told me. He said, you should come back in a few years. Yoga is something that comes with maturity. Basically, he meant I'm not mature enough for yoga. I don't know what that meant, but I didn't like the answer. So I boycotted it. I was like, this yoga is not for me. It was too much props, and you know, it was more for beginners, I think. I didn't think I was something didn't stick with me. Then I was like, okay, I'll be back soon. I never went back. Then I went to Kerala. My mother joined me there. We tried Shivananda. We did the whole course and teacher trainers. It was nice, but I would find myself falling asleep. All through the classes, my mom had to kick me. Taran, get up, get up.
So Shivananda is more like a slow?
Relaxed, you know. Again, it really depends. It's who you are. You know, you're drawn towards a practice. Then I came back home and I was talking to my yoga instructor, who's my mom's yoga instructor. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I didn't really find it really that fun or exciting or anything. And very interestingly, she tore a piece of paper and she looked at me and she said, Taran, I think... excuse me. I think... excuse me. I think I know what you're going to like. She said, why don't you go and try this place out, this practice out? And she wrote Ashtanga Yoga Mysore. Patabi Joyce. That's all she wrote on a tiny piece of paper. And I went and I Googled. I opened my laptop and I Googled it. First, I Googled Mysore because I'm born in India. I'm raised in India. I've studied my whole life in India. I've literally never left India. And I didn't know where Mysore is because I'm from the north of India. So I opened up the map of India and I'm looking at where Mysore is. Okay, it's in the state of Karnataka, Bangalore. Bangalore, one is heard of. And it's this small little town, city, somewhere in Karnataka, in that state. Okay, and back in the day, there was no, you know, the processes now with the boom in yoga, how you have to register. So you don't call anyone, you just show up. I said, okay, I'm going to go to Mysore. It really was just meant to be, you know, these things I don't try to find the answers anymore. And I reached Mysore and I reached the room and there was, all of them were there, who I didn't know at that point, who they are, who is Patabi Joyce, who is Sharad, who is, you know, Saraswati Ji, nobody. And I arrived in the room and I went up to him, Patabi Joyce, Guruji, and I was like, I want to do yoga. He said, okay. He thought I was a foreigner, you know, because I don't know, maybe the appearance, you Indians, you know, we have a certain look, you think, you know, Indians, we wear saris, we wear our traditional suits. And here I was with my yoga leggings and just like a half sleeves, like anyone else. Mm. And he's like, which country are you from? I said, I'm from India. I was almost like, how can you? I was almost offended. Like, how can you not see? Look at my features. And he's like, India? And then they started talking in their dialect. And I was just like, okay. And he's like, what part of India are you from? I said, from Punjab. So from that moment on, he called me Punjabi. He's like, hey, okay, Punjabi. So that's how he would call me by my, where the place I was from. And yeah, I just, that was it. He said, okay, you come, you do yoga. And he taught me Surya Namaskar, eh? And I knew it. I just knew it. That was it. I was sold. After Surya Namaskar, eh? I told myself, this is it. I knew it.
And that's only like the...
That's it.
Warm-up, the first warm-up you do in the first series.
It just
series.
Took the first sun salutation to make me realize that I found my practice. That's it. So I think this is something I must have been carrying from my past, some life, because there's no way you can just like, you know, it's like this divine intervention and it's just happened so organically. Nothing of it was planned. How do you know? I just don't know. How do you know?
But I can say the exact same thing because I tried so many different yoga forms for like 5 years, both in Norway and in the States. And it was the first time I went to this beginner's course in Ashtanga Yoga. It was like I knew. So it's really, when you talk about it, it's like listening to myself, because exactly. And I can't explain it. It's like you just know it. It's the feeling that this is the right thing.
It's like the first time when you see your baby. You just know it's love at first sight. It's that feeling you can't explain.
I thought you were going to say your husband.
Well, we can leave that for another discussion.
No, but and for me it was because at that time I was doing kickboxing. I was like on a professional level. I was going matches and, you know, and I just dropped everything else. I just quit my kickboxing, my weightlifting, my running, everything. And I was like, I knew.
This is it.
From like the first day. And I totally just dove into it. And like, and that's, yeah.
So I think as a community, which is such a, we have such a big community all around the world. This is one thing we all can connect with, right? We have this common connect where we just, like there was this calling. There's a calling and you go into it and you try it and then you just know.
Yeah.
And something clicks in that moment and that's it.
Yeah.
You just surrender.
And I think it's so difficult because I have a lot of people asking me, I want to do yoga, but what kind of yoga should I do? And it's like, oh, do you think Ashtanga is something for me? And it's like, it's so difficult to give an answer because, you know,
absolutely.
I don't know if one person is connected to Ashtanga yoga or yin yoga or, you know, so what I always have to answer is just you just have to try.
Yeah.
You have to test it out
and be patient.
Yeah. And see what resonates with you, you know.
Exactly.
It's like it's not a, and also it's not like if you're like an active person then you would like this form or, you know, so it's really something you have to test and feel what kind of is
your
form.
Yeah.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So, but, so you were practicing with Pattabhi Joyce.
Yes, I had a good 6-7 years with him before he passed.
Yeah, but traditionally, it's mostly men who practice yoga. I mean, if you go 50 years back.
Well, in India, there was no man or woman practice. Like, I mean, men also didn't practice yoga.
Mm.
Not really. Indian the people only never practiced yoga, like physical asanas. When I say yoga, I mean asanas.
Mm.
See, if we get a choice, if you give us choices, we're going to take the easiest route out. Or I'm not saying Indians are not physically very, you know, like active or anything, but like you see, it's an interesting way of looking at it, because Indians are extremely spiritual people, very religious also, and this is something which we are born with, because we have a very, very strong set of values and culture. And so, you know, in every household in India, everyone's doing yoga.
Mm.
But when I say yoga, I don't mean asanas. There are other trees of yoga. There's bhakti yoga, there's jhana yoga, there's karma yoga. You know, karma yoga, like selfless service. Bhakti yoga is devotion. Every Indian house, from the top level to the grassroots level, we are so into devotion. We are so devotional. You see the small, small things. We've been seeing our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. These are little devotion. I mean like lighting the diya, doing puja. Like,
okay, so I have to stop you. What's the diya? What's the puja?
Oh,
because,
sorry,
you know, people haven't heard about this.
A candle.
Yeah.
So we incense candles. Every morning we get up, we have a bath. We go straight to the temple. Every house has their little temple. And we light our candle and we do puja. Puja is prayers.
Mm.
And that is devotion.
Mm.
And we follow the moon calendars. We follow the, you know, we have these calendars where we everything, it's imbibed in us.
Mm.
This is how we are raised, that, oh, one day you're going to get married, you're going to have your own house, you're going to perform the same duties, and you're going to do the same thing in your own house. So this is devotion. We are, every day of our life, whether it's serving, whether it's taking care of the family, whether it's, there is devotion running through every house. Then karma yoga is something we are very big on. It comes so naturally to us, selfless service. Mm. We are always helping out each other, not without really saying it. You know how in the new age world it's called like philanthropist?
Mm.
Like you know when you give donations and all. We do that, but we don't talk about it.
Mm.
It's just something we do. It comes naturally. So I think karma yoga and bhakti yoga is very, very, and jnana yoga, studying of the scriptures, Sanskrit, understanding the philosophy, it's imbibed in us. It's in our, it's a part of our culture.
Mm.
So that is not something. Then asanas is
the physical.
The physical.
Yeah.
We are lazy little bit, I would say. Not anymore. I am now seeing a big change in that.
Mm.
A lot of, because you see, when I went first time, I was shocked to actually see that I'm in India. I'm surrounded only by Westerners. There was no Indian in that room.
Mm. Why?
And I'm looking around and I'm like, where am I? Again, I think initially this practice was there was a few Westerners, a handful of them that kind of found it, or he found them. And from there, it grew from the West and came back to its origin, to its source.
Mm.
How interesting is that?
Mm.
Usually, yoga is something that went from India. But this Ashtanga yoga went to the West, went all over, and then it's come back.
Mm.
And now Indians, today, this year, 2022, after COVID, was the first year when I was January, I was in Mysore practicing with Guruji, was the first time I saw a room with 100. There were 86, 87 of us Indians from every city, every nook of the country. Wow, that felt good. So it took 20 years.
But why do you think it is like
awareness,
that?
Awareness, lack of awareness. That there was, now with social media and everything, it's like, of course, this had to happen. We picked up on it, you know.
Mm.
And I think also now women are much more in the forefront in India.
Mm.
We are not equal to men in many ways. And we are actually happy to be not equal, you know, in terms of rights or in terms of like duties and responsibilities. We do consider a man as the, you know, the epitome of the house. He is the provider. He is the one. And we have a certain role to play. So, but I think now women have stopped feeling less guilty of taking out time for themselves. You know, again, we were so bound by our devotion and our duties and our responsibilities that we put ourselves back. Like we didn't give ourselves time. We felt guilty for it.
Mm.
Now women are coming forward and they are not feeling guilty about taking out time for themselves, to focus on themselves, even if it's 1 hour in the day.
Mm.
It's possible. It's happening. The change is happening.
But you were the first Indian girl to be authorized by Pathabi Joyce.
From what I hear, yes.
Yes.
Apart from his family, Guruji's family, his immediate family, yes, I was told that I was the first Indian authorized.
What's an authorization for people who doesn't know this system, this tradition?
An authorization is like getting a degree, you know, whichever work job you take up. First you get a degree, then you go and work, right? So this is like you practice for a few years and when, see, this is the difference about authorization back in the day and authorization today. Back in the day, an authorization was not something you asked for. Mm. It was given to you. When your guru, your mentor, felt that you are ready to take up the responsibility of sharing this practice or this knowledge, that he told you, he would tell you that now you are ready to teach. It's like giving you the gift of. And now it's changed because yoga in general has changed. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, you know. It's a lot of money involved now. So now, after a certain few years, you can ask for authorization, respectfully ask to be granted authorization. Mm. So it's a big difference.
What does it require to be authorized?
A minimum criteria would be a few years of practice to have finished level one, to be authorized as to teach level one in Ashtanga Yoga. Level two, I mean, then you have to finish level two, then advanced A, and it goes on and on and on. Mm. Yeah.
And you have to regularly visit.
Yes, you have to regularly visit and go with the intention of always wanting to visit. Not that, okay, now I've got my authorization, now I'm a teacher, now I don't need to go and learn anymore. Mm. No, that's the wrong attitude in general. You know, always try to learn more and more. Keep going back. If you're a doctor, you have to keep going with the changing times. You have to keep advancing. Even doctors have to study. Lawyers should know. Rules are changing. Regulations are changing. Same way, yoga instructors also. You have to keep. Firstly, yoga, you never stop learning. Mm. It's limitless. You have to understand one thing. The minute you think that, oh, I know it all, I have learned primary series, now I'm a teacher, now I don't need to go anymore. Mm. Then you're finished. Mm. You know? Mm. Just keep going and learning, because it's limitless. There's no end to spirituality. Is there an end? Mm. No, it's limitless. So how can yoga stop? How can the learning stop? Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good answer too, because people sometimes ask me, oh, you've been doing this yoga for 20 years. You never get tired of it? You never got like sick of it, you know? How do you keep your motivation? And I'm like, because there's always something to learn.
Yeah.
Always something to deepen. And it can be the physical practice, but also the, like you say, the spiritual journey, you know? So it's like, it's
psychological,
really good.
Emotional, physiological. It's working on your nerves. It's working on your emotions. Mm. It's working on your mind. It's working on your body. I mean, how many levels is it working on? Mm. And you never stop working on yourself. That's the end result.
Yeah. So let's talk about Mysore and us, because having you here, you know, I really have to tell my listeners the story about us. Because in my intro, I guess you didn't understand Norwegian, but I said that you actually changed my life. Hmm. And I'm not going to be too emotional here. I'm going to try. But you came into my life at a point where I was really struggling. I was going through my divorce. Mm-hmm. This was back in 2008.
So I remember 15 that.
15 years ago. It was really early in my Ashtanga yoga journey. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't like a regular practitioner, but you know, I had been starting to deepen my practice, really curious about everything. You came as a guest teacher, and there was something, you know, I think, you know, my husband is a man, but I think I fell in love with you as a person, as a teacher. And at the moment, at one point you told me, I'm leaving, I'm going back to India. And I remember having this...
You had a meltdown.
I had a total meltdown. And I was like, you cannot leave me now.
Yeah.
So I was like already kind of dependent on you, you know, I was like, don't leave me. And do you remember what you said?
I remember telling you, why don't you come with me?
And I was like, come with you to India? Because at that time, it never really occurred to me that that was an option, that I was going to India, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but you know, and I made all these, not excuses, but you know, problem. Mm-hmm. Yes, only yeah. seeing problems that, but I have my daughter, you know, I cannot leave her, or, you know, all this.
Yes,
it
yes.
was such a
I said, bring her also along.
Yes. And the end of the story was like, only a few weeks later, me yeah. and Sophie, my daughter, she was 9 at that time, we were on a plane to Delhi.
Yes.
And there are so many things I would like to talk about when I start talking about this first trip, but we're going to keep it a little bit short. But, you know, I still remember the feeling coming out of the plane, going into the airport in Delhi, coming out. The vibe, the feeling, the smell, the noise, everything is kind of like stuck inside yeah. of me. And it was the most wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
And when you talk about Norway, you love Norway yeah. so much. It's like when I came to India the first time, it was like, yeah. This is my home.
Maybe we should trade places and lives. I can be in Norway, you can go to India.
Well, my biggest dream is to end up in India. But anyway, that's also another story. But so, you know, and it meant so much for me, especially because I was at such a weak, in a weak place, you know, mentally and you know, going through this hard time. And you kind of invited me. We went to stay with your mother. We went to Mysore together, spent 1 month together there. And it was really the start of like, I'm not going to say my new life, but it was such a big changing point for
me. That was the turning point, the tipping point.
Tipping point, turning point, really.
Yeah.
What do you remember? I mean, what did you think when asking this naive blonde, how do you say?
Exotic.
No. Well, maybe that in India.
I mean, for us, you're exotic, yes. Yeah. No, I think, you know, okay, first things first. It was love at first sight. I think it was mutual. Yeah. Secondly, it was a magnetic pull. I was drawn to you. You were drawn to me. You know, we are all magnets. Mm. Human beings, we are all magnets. Energetically, you are drawn to each other. It is the law of nature, right? You either attract or you repel. We were definitely not the repelling ones. We were the attraction. There was strong attraction. There was And yeah, we were just two magnets that attracted. And you know, the third point is we don't realize when we are going through a very challenging and difficult time in our lives, you can't see the light of day. It's very hard for the person to see the light of day who's going through it. Mm. It's usually someone from the outside that knows that you are so deep in some turmoil that the only way is to run. Literally. Sometimes when, you know, even they say it at home when the kids are crying and screaming and you're catching your hair and just run out of the house. Whether you go for fresh air, you go for a walk. So I saw you being in a very difficult time and situation, like a rut, and you weren't being able to get yourself out of it. And I don't know if it was just timing or synchronicity, but that moment when you presented yourself like, no, you cannot go, I said, no, but then you come with me, you know. So it was in a way where I could see what you needed more than you could recognize it yourself. So I just was the mediator to kind of pinch you and pull you out from your situation. And then that's it. You came to India and you literally, for that 1 month at least, you could forget and get your mind off it. Sometimes you don't realize what you require, you know. People around you can gauge and pick up on that. So that was that.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, and at that time, I didn't really know who Patabi Joyce was. You know, I had read about him, heard about him. But, you know, I had never, I didn't really have like.
I mean, you were doing the practice over here. Was Guruji, I'm sorry, because I don't remember, you know, so many years have gone. When you came with me, was Guruji alive?
He was still alive.
Okay.
And it was his 91st
birthday. Right.
So, you know, and you took me to this
shop to buy your sari.
I got my first sari.
Yeah.
Sophie got a sari. We went to this birthday party, which was like very traditional.
Grand celebration.
Yes. And, you know, and I have to tell one story because I think you will remember this. At one point, everybody was lining up in a queue because we were going to kiss his feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, for me, and also because, you know, for me, he at that time, he was not like my guru. He was not like, I didn't have like this a hero picture of him, you know. Yeah. So for me, he was basically more or less just an old man.
Yeah.
And people say, yeah, now we're going to go.
Bow down to his feet down. Or touch it or kiss it as you like.
Yeah. And I was terrified. Yeah. I was like, oh, I cannot do that.
Yeah. How,
you know, for us, you know, in our culture, it's like.
To surrender to someone like that. It's
really strange, you know.
Yes.
So I remember taking Sophie and saying, let's go outside and just wait. Because I couldn't do it. And, you know, after some years, you know, he passed away the year after.
Yeah.
And it's like this one thing that I regret that I didn't do.
Oh, you should have done it.
And I didn't get a picture with him. Oh. So, you know, all these things that I should have known, but I didn't. But anyway, nice or thing.
But just to make you feel better so you don't feel so guilty, even I never touched, like bowed down or, you know, kissed or his feet. Because traditionally in India, women, we don't do that.
Okay. So why do you do it?
We are not supposed to touch a man's feet. The irony, you have to hear this. Girls, we don't touch anyone's feet. The only people's feet we are supposed to touch is once we get married, to touch our husband's feet and touch our husband's father's feet. Hmm. Why? Because to thank him for giving us that husband. So only after marriage are we supposed to touch feet, not before. So even I never did it because it's not in our nature to touch feet before marriage.
Okay.
So you can feel good about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so it was, I don't know, like I said, that month really, really changed my life, my perspective, my love for yoga. And ever since, you know, I've been back to India 15 times.
Wow.
Because, you know, some years I've been there 2 months. Two trips, you know, you
15.
Calling me saying in 2 weeks I'm going to Rishikesh.
We always try to coordinate our trips. So
yeah,
we can...
and you say you want to come and I'm like, are you crazy? It's in 2 weeks, you know, you hardly get your visa in two weeks. And this was back in 2018 and, you know, and 2 weeks later I'm
there
on a plane and you're giving me such great experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, because obviously, you know, India has come to mean so much for me.
Yeah.
It's like my, it sounds maybe stupid to say, but like a second home.
Yeah.
I love everything about India. And I have a dream that I one day will live in
I'm
India.
I'm telling you, in your past life, you were Indian.
I think can we say that I was an Indian princess?
Yes, royalty.
No, so it's really interesting to see how like one trip, 1 month
can change your life.
Yes. And I even told my parents that you have to experience India. You know, it has to be on your bucket list.
Yeah.
Now my father, he says that, well, he has some stomach issues. Yeah. So he's like, my stomach goes bad just by the thought of getting on a plane to India. So he's like, he's not going to do it. But yeah, I try to convince people to experience India.
I would love more and more people to come. I try. But you know, again, and not many people are like you, you know, Vibeka. You just go for it. Mm. It's just like I plant the seed and it doesn't take much convincing. I don't have to convince you. I just have to plant the seed and you're sold. There it is.
Yeah.
So you take those chances. You go for it. Mm. And I would love more and more people to come. You know, anyway, we are such hospitable people. We want everyone to come. Mm. Even in Mysore, anywhere, we are like, oh, you want to come to our house? You want to have chai? We'll make you food. We love to, you know, the culture such. We just open our homes, open our families to everyone. So it's,
And that's what I've experienced too, though.
Yeah, you've seen that in India. Oh. Everyone's calling you to their house. Yeah. Come have lunch. So hospitable, so loving, vibrant. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, but for the last 15 years, you've been traveling around as a teacher, and you've experienced yoga in the Western world a lot.
Yes.
Because you've been to Mexico, Finland, Norway, everywhere to teach.
Yeah. Brazil, Germany.
But would you say that yoga has survived from its original form? Do we do it the way you do it here? It's like, you know, for example, you know, people say, oh, I love Indian food. Mm-hmm. And they go to India and it's like, it's not what you get in restaurant here in Norway. So it's like the opposite, you know, you yoga in India and you come to Norway. Is it the same?
You know, like food, Indian food, even yoga, it started out as something small. It reached a boom. Mm. There was this big yoga boom all over the world. And I felt it when I was traveling. Then it went to saturation. It reached its saturation point. Then it went down. Now it's like, I don't even know if we can call it yoga anymore, honestly speaking. Because when so much money is involved, you see, it's... First, it was not... There was Guru Dakshina. There was Guru Dakshina is like you know, it's like a donation. You give something. It's out of respect for the guru's time and energy. Now it's big money. Mm. So it's the industry, it's one of the booming industries. So I think it has way past its saturation in terms of that. There are too many yoga studios, more yoga teachers, too many yoga teachers, and very few practitioners. Mm. That's what's happened. Mm. It should be the opposite. Mm. There should be more practitioners and less yoga teachers. Everybody's a yoga teacher.
I know.
Everyone in the world. There'll be a lawyer and yoga teacher. Mm. Doctor, yoga teacher.
But why do you think it's so attractive for people to become a yoga teacher? Is it really that great?
I don't think the aim is to be a yoga teacher. I think people are missing the point here, you know? I don't know how, maybe they see it as a way of life or, I don't know, but we definitely don't need so many yoga teachers and shalas, studios. We need more practitioners. So when I say we've passed that saturation, that's when this happened. Mm. And it would be that authentic, you know, that authentic traditional space that is lacking now. It's becoming, again, because of money being involved, being a big business, somehow we are losing ourselves in it. We are losing the tradition. We are losing the reasons why we even practiced in the first place. Mm. You know, because nobody practices yoga to become a teacher.
No.
You don't think of that. You know, that
well,
is...
a lot of people do,
now,
though.
Now, yeah. Now.
But
so
before.
It was then and now. Mm. So if you compare then with now, there's a huge difference.
Mm.
Definitely.
But why do you think yoga has gained so much traction and impact in the Western world? Because, you know, like you say, at one point it was really booming.
Yeah.
What is it about us Westerners getting so drawn into this practice, this, I mean, I'm not going to say tradition, because for many people it's
physical. No, yoga in general.
Physical.
Well, y'all are definitely, I would love to say definitely as an Indian person, y'all are very disciplined people. Mm. Far more disciplined than us, you know. For you, health is a priority. Being fit is a priority. Indians are not. Or let's say not even Indians. I don't want to generalize and say Indians are not fit or health is not a priority, because that's not true. Now people have started getting up and waking up.
Mm.
But I just feel like I definitely see maybe because your lives are so stressful, there's work, there's family, there's maybe everybody needs yoga. Maybe you'll need it a little more. In terms of like, because, you know, y'all don't have the support system here, you know, I'm saying for our daily life, like for me to be able to practice, to be able to teach requires me to take out a certain amount of hours a day.
Mm.
I have that, so, you know, everyone has it. I think it's something to do with the southern countries or let's say Asia. We grow up, we have a lot of support system.
Mm.
We live with our families. You see, that's a big point.
Mm.
When you live with your families, first your father, mother, then you get married, you move into your husband's house, you live with his parents. So as there is a flip side to that, because you want to be treated as an adult and taking decisions in your life, but you also have a good side to it because you have immense help and support system. The reason I can sit here with you and have this chat today, spend 1 month away from both my children, and, you know, they are pretty small yet, is because of that support system, which allows me to be here.
Mm.
So I feel, so I'm not saying our challenges are less, but we definitely have that upper hand that we can, you know, be in that position. And you guys, it's not easy for y'all, you know. The challenges are very much, and y'all don't have support systems. So I feel with that also you require yoga more.
Mm.
It's and you manage to take out the time,
mm.
surprisingly. Y'all all manage to take out the time. Y'all all are there in the morning, whether it's cold, snowing, raining. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You tell us to get up at 5 in the morning and go, we'll find 100 excuses.
Mm.
Oh, our maid has not come today. Oh, you know, it's so crazy.
Mm. Yeah. So what you're actually saying is that we need it a little more.
Yeah, you need it a little more maybe.
And it's a good tool for us though.
Yes.
Yeah, that we can. So before we end, I always have this last question for my guests.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, this is for my listeners, what is your best advice, your tip in relation to yoga, lifestyle, life? What is your best advice? What can you give them?
Please don't take yourself too seriously.
Yes.
Moderation is key.
Mm.
Balance. Find that balance in your daily life, in your work, in your yoga practice.
Mm.
And just stay balanced. Stay neutral.
Mm.
You don't want to go too much into the yoga because you will get burned out.
Mm.
Just keep it balanced. That's the only way I think personally I've managed to survive for 20 years. Mm. Is just staying balanced. Don't get too extreme, you know, with anything in life.
Yeah.
You know, keep that balance.
Mm.
And enjoy yourself. Laugh. Have a good time while you are practicing. I mean, just do it in pure humor and just like take it easy.
Mm.
Don't push yourself. We have enough things and people in our lives pushing us and being, you know, hard on us, and we don't need to be hard on ourselves.
Exactly.
We need to love ourselves a little more. Put yourselves before anything.
Mm.
You come first. Then comes your family, then comes your practice, then comes your work. But put yourself before everything. Self-love.
Thank you. That was more than one tip. I love
it.
So thank you so much for...
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's been a delight.
Yes.
Absolute pleasure.
And, you know, even though I know you so well, I really enjoy listening to all the...
I surprised you.
Yes, you did. No, thank you so much for your time. And I think a lot of people are inspired to come and experience India now.
Glad to be a part of that. Thank you.
Thank you.